Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, bringing you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streaming live at richarddugan.com at those times. And then we put the podcast up on the website for you to listen to. Speaking of which, you might want to listen to the entire podcast because the radio version is only 50 minutes long, but sometimes, depending upon the guest's availability, sometimes it'll go 60, 70, 80, 90 minutes. Who knows? And the only way you're going to know is if you go to the podcasts. Where are they? Well, they're on the radio show's page. They're on the homepage of richarddugan.com. They're on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, and we're working on expanding that list. If you like what we're doing, if it resonates with you, and you'd like to join our merry band of seekers, shall we say, we're not followers, but seekers, and you'd like to support the work we're doing, we are always very grateful for any support that you can give us financially through PayPal. We have a link on the homepage and the missions page. If this is the first time you've listened to this program and you're not sure of what we're doing, then go to the missions page and read what we're all about. And then, of course, there's a PayPal link at the bottom of the page, and you can support us with any amount. Just a clarification, we are not nonprofit, okay? So you can't deduct it from your taxes. Just clarification, stay out of trouble with the IRS. And so there you go. And then, of course, we will be linked to our guest's website if they have one. Some of them do, some of them don't, but we will give you information on how you can get in touch with them. Today is going to be a very interesting conversation here, and we're going to talk with a local woman who is an artist. She is, I even asked her about this as we got started, a metaphysician, if you will, a seeker. I think that's probably a really good word. Tricia Malehi, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program and being with us to have a very interesting conversation about the work that you do, not just in terms of as an artist, but also as a seeker, the work that you're doing to evolve, as we are all trying to evolve, and maybe reach that stage, as I like to put it this way, that stage from survival to thrival. Okay? Mm-hmm. Kind of come up with that word. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, it's lovely to be here again, Richard.
First of all, talk to us a little bit about the art. Folks aren't familiar. What type of outlet, if you will, what modality, what form does your art take?
Well, I use oil pastel. I should make the leap to paints. I haven't yet because I just feel like it would be like learning Chinese at this point. I've developed such a feel for drawing, you know, because you're holding the chalk in your hand. It's a different feeling. But I would like to eventually evolve into painting. It's a richer kind of a presentation.
Yeah. What inspires you? What is it that you like to paint? And what is it that drives you to put it on the canvas? And again, oils and what have you, but to me it's all painting.
Yes. I used to say my oeuvre is fruit, flowers, and faces. These are three things I really love to draw and to paint. I mean, I'm using the word paint. Mm-hmm. We know what it means. I do other things, too. Like, I love figure drawing, the human body. If you can do it well, it's really something to explore because, as we know from Rembrandt and Goya and Michelangelo, the people that really understood the beauty of the human body and bring it forth in a way that really seems to exemplify the godlike stature of a human being, really.
Interesting that you use the term godlike stature, because there are some in our world who consider themselves to be gods. They are in control. They are supposedly leaders in positions of power. It is also said too that in order to really be a leader in a position of power, you've got to have a pretty big ego to want that top spot. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, when was the last time we had a humble leader, you know, in any country, not just here, but anywhere in the world down through history, you know?
Right. And Yeah, I don't know if, I mean, humility is something that's a beautiful in anybody, but, you know, sometimes leaders do need to have a tiny bit of a thicker skin. Although I guess we know that Abe Lincoln was quite humble, although he, I guess I'm not sure if he was arrogant at all. I don't know. But yeah. Winston Churchill is often criticized because he was a bit of a egotist, you might say.
Yeah. But if the portrayals in some of the movies I've seen, yeah, it came across that way.
Right. But the thing is, the way that he was, it was necessary. The things that he accomplished, that kind of hardiness, I don't know what word I'm trying to find,
That's
was necessary.
Yeah.
Because you cannot be too soft if you're in that shark-filled tank. You know, how could you get anything done?
I remember an experience I had at another station where two gentlemen, they came in, and they were producing a late night program, all Spanish, and these were Spanish gentlemen, or at least maybe of Mexican descent, and they would come in and they were dressed in nice suits and everything, and this was the preliminaries, and one of my coworkers who is also Spanish, and we got along really well, And my observation of these two gentlemen, oh my gosh, these guys are so arrogant. They're so full of themselves and everything. And I was sharing this with her. She says, No. You're misreading it. That's not arrogance. That's confidence. And I'm wondering if maybe, using the example of Winston Churchill, maybe he did have a big ego, but also he certainly did. And again, I'm only going based upon the portrayals on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
He was extremely confident.
And it, boy, was it well deserved, because I happen to be a scholar on him. I loved him, so I love him.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read everything on him and several of the books he has written. And he had such a wonderful mind, and he knew it.
Yeah.
His confidence was, you know, well-founded.
Now, isn't that interesting that we have, as human beings in general, we have a real hard time, A, accepting, and B, expressing that which we are good at. It's like if you sit there and you start to talk about how I love to paint. Again, we're going to use the broad brush stroke, no pun intended, of painting.
Yeah.
I'm good at it. I mean, just look at what I've created, all right? Because that's a picture of an apple, right? Yeah, that's an apple. That's what I painted, and you realized that it was an apple. Okay, so I'm good at it because I can paint things that people recognize. So obviously I'm good at it, okay?
Right, that's not a criteria for something being good art-wise.
No,
but
granted,
I will say this, I get what you're driving at.
Yeah.
And I think it was Charlotte Bronte who said that, you know, usually people that are talented are well aware of the gift that's within them. They're not in the dark about that.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the thing about me, I've been accused of being arrogant here and there, but I have fun with it. You know, I just, whatever self-congratulatory impulses I might have, I'm just as liberal with them with other people.
Mm-hmm.
I spend half my time admiring the people that I come into contact with and telling them of their gifts and beauties and whatever. So it's not like it's just all about me.
Sure.
Yeah.
But we do, as individuals, we seem to have a real hard time doing that, acknowledging that which we are truly gifted at doing.
You know, it was in that movie, Bohemian Rhapsody. It was so clever.
Great movie.
It was. Oh, I'm so glad that you liked it. But they had a line in the film that was so true, because they lost their American audience when they did a video called I Want to Break Free, and they all dressed in drag. And in America, we all turned our backs on them for that. MTV wouldn't even play them after that. And what Brian May said was, Americans are Puritans in public, perverts in private. So to me, that somehow ties into what you're saying about this sort of false humility. When you're young, you're told not to think too highly of yourself, although I feel like that has changed a bit now. But when I was younger, I remember hearing that a lot.
I remember at the age of 21, I remember that I was 21 when I was told this, because it was right around the time that I was given a surprise birthday party. Anyway, I had just interviewed someone, And I was sitting in the studio after the interview, and we were just chatting, myself and two other people, the guest and someone else. And the comment was made to me, you know, Richard, you're wise beyond your years. And it wasn't made facetiously. It was a genuine compliment. Mm-hmm. And I thought about that, and I thought, okay, it's a double-edged sword here, because on the one hand, it's like, I'm wise beyond my years. As I get older, will I be able to keep ahead of my wisdom, you know, will my wisdom keep ahead of my aging? But at the same time, it's like, and I'm thankful that it didn't go to my head, okay? Mm-hmm. But I was very grateful for the compliment. And yeah. It's just because I'm a curious individual, those questions that come up, they come up. You know, I take no credit for any questions that I ask in these programs. Okay?
Okay.
The universe is asking the questions. I'm just along for the ride.
Hmm.
So you talk about your intuitiveness.
Yes.
That's mine, shall we say.
Hmm.
And I've even had situations where my mind has said, no, I don't want to ask that question. No, I don't want to ask that question. It's not pertinent to what we're talking about on the program. No, don't. And it won't. And of course, the question just pounds away at the door. It's
oh.
Like, you need to be asked this. So I was in the middle of one interview once, and I said, I told my guest, I said, I need to stop. Now, we weren't stopping the interview. I said, I've got this question that's nagging at me. I really don't think that it's pertinent, but it's not going to go away if I don't ask the question.
Yeah.
And, of course, I put the question out there, and then we talked about it and moved on through that portal, if you will.
That's fascinating.
So, to me, it's really interesting. From the standpoint, I did an interview just the other day where, because you've already done this already in the short 10 minutes that we've been talking,
mm-hmm.
you've mentioned a couple of three people in addition to Winston Churchill, several of others
yeah.
you've quoted. And that was happening in an interview that I was conducting where the guest was doing it and then I was doing it. It was stuff that I had read and things that I had heard and so forth down through my short little life. And what was so fascinating was that I used to think that I was so literarily deficient that I hadn't read much.
Mm-hmm.
But the more we talked and the more stuff kept coming out of my mouth about this author and that speaker and that inspirational program presenter, et cetera, I'm going, wow, I guess I am fairly well-read. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I can take a little credit for that because I chose to read, Khalil Gibran, and I've read Paramahansa Yogananda, and I've read some of the books by Gandhi.
What about Siddhartha?
I have read about Siddhartha. Oh, by the way, we have a cat. His name is Sid, short for Siddhartha.
Oh, nice.
There are only scant moments when he's like the Buddha,
yeah.
when he sits still. But it's fascinating to me to hear, when I was doing the mythology series back in 2014,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't study mythology in school. I mean, I was aware, prior to the series, I was aware of Greek mythology, Roman mythology, this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Some would say even biblical mythology,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's the 66 or I can't remember if it's 66 and then 72 in the Catholic Bible and then the other apocryphal writings and so forth, the interesting stories that come about.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't pass judgment on any of those because I don't know whether any of it's true or not. It is all a question of belief.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
It's all a question of belief.
I guess you're right about that. We were discussing that earlier. I do feel like that you can intuit things that are true. In my case, I'll give you an example that's quite mundane,
mm-hmm.
but you can imagine if it works in this way, what other ways does this same faculty work in my life? And so I hung a mirror a couple nights ago above my wonderful clawfoot tub in my bathroom.
Mm.
And I have a round mirror. I've had it about 10 years. And it's very sturdy. The string in back is, you know, kind of screwed in a way that looks like it could go through a earthquake. So I hung that in the bathtub, above my bathtub, and I got in the tub. And right away I thought, oh, what if that thing came down on me in the tub? It'd decapitate me. And I thought, oh, Jesus, what, you know, this is a crazy thought, ridiculous, just relax. And I could not shake that feeling. I got out of the tub and took that dang mirror down. Now, I hung it in the living room. Nothing happened that night. The next night, I heard a loud crash in the living room, and I went in there, and that mirror had come down, and the nail was fine. The string had snapped. Now, there was no precedent for that. I'd never had a mirror do that. That mirror I'd had a long time. So that thought was, it's almost like truth is given to you if you can hear it.
Yes, yes.
And so there's an example of where I heard something and it was true.
Yeah. However, of course, the fear on your part.
Yes.
Was, it was justified from the standpoint that it drove you to take action.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And which you did.
Yes.
And you weren't harmed, and yet the truth was that the mirror was going to fall.
Right.
Short and simple.
Yes.
And I've had similar situations myself, not so much fear-based per se in that regard, where I felt like there was imminent danger for me.
Yeah.
Pardon me. Okay. But I was bicycling to work one day. And this was in Phoenix, and this was out in a farm country. And so the blocks are basically a mile long and a mile wide. They're mile square, okay, the farm fields, as they have them set up. And I was getting this impression as I was coming up to an intersection saying, all right, you need to make a right turn and go that way. Now, from there, I would know where to go, you know, to get to work and so forth. And I'm thinking, what the heck? And I've shared this on the program many times.
Oh.
And I went a half mile straight. I went, stopped at the intersection, went on, half mile. The impression that I was getting got stronger and stronger and stronger, and I couldn't shake it.
That you were going to get hit?
No. That I should turn right
okay.
at that intersection back there.
Oh, back there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was half a mile down the road. And
yeah.
So I turned around.
Yeah.
And I went back to that intersection, and I made that proverbial right. It was now a left turn.
Now a left, yeah.
And I went up and a mile, and then I went across, and then I came back down a mile, avoiding that mile stretch that
okay.
I had already started.
Okay.
I got to work. Nothing happened. But I have pondered that and wondered, okay, what is it that I missed? What is it that might have happened that didn't? Because
yeah.
eventually I gave in to that impression.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it wouldn't have happened between the streets and that mile stretch. Maybe it would have happened when I got to that intersection, the next
right,
intersection.
Right.
Maybe a car would have run a stop sign or a red light.
Did you ever find out?
No. And you know what? I basically chalked it up to, and I joke with listeners about this, if you are going to listen to that still small voice, as we call it, and not follow the promptings, then why are you listening? You know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So for me, it was, all right, if you're going to get these promptings, you're going to get these feelings, and you just need to go with it.
Right. And in a more quantum category, that same thing is probably working when you're intuiting whether Jesus really existed or whether our soul goes on after death or things that might be somewhat immutable, ineffable, things you may not be able to truly know rationally. In this way, if you have an incredibly strong intuition about it or, you know, you've had contact with the other side, then you can believe it. Just like what we talked about.
Yeah. And I think that one of the fascinating things for me doing these programs, one conversation I had with Greg Braden some years ago when he was promoting his book. I'm trying to remember the title of the book now, Spontaneous Healing of Belief.
Yeah. Who was that again?
Greg Braden.
Oh, very. I thought that was a Deepak Chopra book. No.
The okay. Spontaneous Healing of Belief. And in the conversation,
yeah,
he said that our evolutionary process is going to take us to a place where, as opposed to now, where we have these beliefs, and many people like to make them concrete. You mm-hmm. know, I know it because, yeah. you know, but you don't know it, you believe it. Well, Greg says our evolutionary process is we're going to make the transition between from belief to knowing. We all will do that, mm-hmm. okay? That we will just know that we know. Right now, our beliefs are just our beliefs. And when someone says, no, I know, but you know, this, and it isn't even a question of evidence. It's one of the things that I always struggled with when I was working for a Christian radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would say, well, you know, there's been evidence found in this place and this place mm-hmm. and this place and this place mm-hmm. that proves that the Bible is true and that the stories mm-hmm. are true. Mm-hmm. And that. I said, well, then it's no longer faith. Your philosophy now isn't a philosophy anymore. Now it's fact-based.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that there's a God. Now, what you were just saying before about something being true,
mm-hmm.
I can theorize. I can go through the steps. For mm-hmm. example, I inside have this sense that my life has meaning. Okay? It has
mm-hmm.
purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that I have a life's purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that this world is not an accident. This universe is not an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I don't know who created it or whom or they.
But it's okay. awe-inspiring.
Okay. Right. Exactly. It is. Very much so.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Because if I didn't have that sense in me that my life had meaning, then it wouldn't make any difference. I could go out and pillage and rape and plunder because this is all an accident and my life has no meaning. But that sense inside of me says my life does have meaning.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to do that other stuff. And I'm going to be about my life's purpose. But that's just a feeling I have. That's just that sense that I have.
That feeling you have in this case seems like it must be love. Because I bet you wouldn't be compelled in those directions anyway. But I don't know.
Yeah, that's that's the quandary. I am in the process, too, of trying to better understand how things are supposed to work. When you look at the universe,
mm-hmm.
and we talked about this before we started about things hurtling through the cosmos, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've often, I don't know about you, but I've viewed the cosmos as a macro example of what's going on the cellular level. Let's just say of
wow,
the human
that's
being.
That's very esoteric, but I love it. I've
okay.
had the same thought.
Yeah. And when they showed me the diagrams in school, when I was growing up, going to school in science and biology and so forth, and they would show you the makeup of a molecule,
mm-hmm.
and you'd have the atom, and you'd have the neutrons, electrons, and protons circling. Well, doesn't that look like a little solar system?
A galaxy, yeah.
A galaxy, a solar system. Right,
wow,
exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here thinking, okay.
And I forget, too, on the planet, what is the percentage of water on the planet compared to land? Do you
I
remember?
Believe it's about 73. I heard it was about 73%, maybe
water?
A little higher. Yeah.
Yeah. And think of how close that corollary is to the body.
Exactly.
Fascinating.
Macro, micro.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting here and if it's often there's this phrase and I can't remember exactly where it comes from, but that the phrase is as above, so below.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And
mm-hmm.
Below, so above.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to muse about all of these different things. And the one of the thoughts that came to me was about our spiritual existence. The physical body is not the spiritual body. Okay. It's material. And science has told us also, scientists have told us, everything is energy. Well, then the soul would also be energy, too.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a television series that I love watching. I haven't seen it for a long time, but I loved watching it when it first came out. And, of course, I binge-watched some of the other stuff. And there's a character in this science fiction television series.
What's this show called?
Star Trek Next Generation.
Okay, and you're Trekkie.
Right, and there's one character. There's one character. People
yeah.
wouldn't think of what I'm about to explain as a character, but it is. And I don't know that Roddenberry intended for it to be thought of in this context.
Yeah.
But there's one character that, in my estimation, epitomizes our spiritual connection to one another and the universe.
Okay.
And that character is the Borg. Now,
Borg?
The Borg, B-O-R-G.
Borg. Okay.
And it's made up of individuals who have been, in essence, they have been taken from their planets, all right?
Yeah.
They have been physically modified,
mm-hmm.
and they are given commands through the modifications that have been made to them
mm-hmm.
to carry out specific tasks to achieve, I don't know what the end goal is for the Borg, other than to assimilate other species into their collective and so
okay.
forth. But
what is a Borg?
It is a humanoid. It's a humanoid who has a lot of, it has bioelectronic devices. It might have an electronic eye and other types of things. And it uses, in essence, what we would call Wi-Fi to communicate.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So they've been they're half robot and half human or half humanoid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But each one of them has its own individual task in the collective.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's 100,000. One of them has the task of tightening all the bolts, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And another one has the task of tightening all the screws,
mm-hmm.
just as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the two tasks are totally separate.
Mm-hmm.
However, the collective and whoever is controlling the collective knows what the big picture is.
Mm-hmm.
So I need someone to tighten the bolts. I need someone to tighten the screws.
Mm-hmm.
I need someone to do this, do that.
Mm-hmm.
We are in that same pattern. So when we get those impressions, we get that intuition from the still small voice, our higher self, whatever you want to call it. To me, that's like that higher power that we might refer to as God,
mm-hmm.
giving us instruction for our individual personage
mm-hmm.
to carry out a task.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing your part. I'm doing mine. Totally different stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But
well,
somehow
yeah, that,
it all works together.
Right. In fact, Martin Luther King said something along those lines, maybe a little different, that that not everyone can be famous, I guess. I've forgotten his exact wording, but he said that everybody can be great because everybody can serve.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was so beautiful because it is true that when you're contributing to the collective, as you mentioned, there's just such a gratification in that, such a feeling of living up to being part of this, you know, unfathomable universe, this humanity
yeah.
that we're a part of.
Earlier
you spoke about how this is something I reject somewhat now that I've gotten older, that the human body is somehow kind of a booby prize of some kind, that spirituality is the true condition and, you know, more of the etheric realms is really where the high and, you know, the high-minded really live and you're really just enduring the mortal coil.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. There's something in me that always knows that the universe is utterly lawful to the last atom. And so I think if this florid and beautiful condition we call life
mm-hmm.
is what it is with birds and humans and food and movies and, you know, Mother Nature, whatever,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that that's a second-rate anything. That may be literally the ultimate, because the visceral experience of touch,
mm-hmm.
of taste, mm-hmm. of, you know, everything that the body provides can lead to very ecstatic spiritual states.
Mm-hmm.
And so the human body, crude as it seems to be,
mm-hmm.
is really kind of a agent for a great ecstasy, joy, bliss. So I don't know. I don't any longer think of it as just this kind of horrible backpack that I have to carry, which is how I often, the spiritual traditions tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're an ascetic or you're rejecting society
yeah.
and comfort and all that, you do that when you're seeking enlightenment, when you're young. You know, mortification of the flesh is supposedly one of the surest routes. But I, like I said, as I've gotten older, I begin to think that the human body is central to the condition.
Well, that's interesting because, and I would tend to agree with you because obviously we're in the body, okay? Now, I've often used the analogy that if it were intended by the Creator for us to live solitary lives, I would bet you there are enough planets in the universe for each one of us to inhabit one.
Mm-hmm.
What's the reality? 7.6 billion people are on this planet, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there must be a reason for that. Whether we know what it is,
remember
in my estimation, there must be a reason.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I would, yeah. You have to remember that when you feel like you've lost heart or you've lost faith, is that if you're still alive, there's a reason for it. But what we were talking the other day, and this is a bit far-flung, but I find it fascinating, the idea that gravity is literally a mortal condition that is like the embodiment of love, like the fact that Mother Earth kind of magnetizes us to her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I haven't quite figured out how to say it coherently, but intuitively I feel like it's love that holds us here.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question in this cosmological conversation here. I go from the macro to the micro, especially to the cellular level.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask this question from the very human perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Under what system, and I'm going to use the term of government.
Yeah.
Under what system of government do the cells of the body function? Now to the macro. Under what system of government do the planets and the stars and all the stardust that are moving around in the universe operate under? Now, first of all, you can get rid of what we supposedly take for granted a lot of times,
mm-hmm.
democracy. It does not function under the system of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you know what would happen if it did.
What?
The body would cease to exist because every cell would want its individuality and would want to go off and do its own thing, and the body would cease to exist.
Wait, now I don't know that that's a true definition of democracy.
Well, but what I'm saying is that it isn't that form.
Okay.
And it isn't other forms of isms that people have in this country abhor, okay, and I'm not even going to mention what those are.
Mm-hmm.
There are two particular ones.
Mm-hmm.
But I came up with one that makes a heck of a lot more sense.
Okay.
And it's the ism that I kind of came up with.
Let's hear it.
Interdependentism.
That makes utter sense.
We're all connected, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But yet at the same
time,
we're all individuals.
As much as I hate to admit that when I think of certain people, but go on. Yeah.
We're all connected, but we're still all individuals.
Yes.
And yet if we listen to that prompting and do our part, and because I'm sure when you're painting,
mm-hmm.
you get into that zone, right?
I'll tell you what compels me mostly. I think in every human breast, there's a feeling of wanting to rejoice and express. Because, just being alive, look at a baby, you can see it. Just being alive and breathing is a reason to celebrate. So when I'm doing artwork, I really feel like it's going to sound really kind of pretentious, but it is true. I feel like I'm laying a wreath at the feet of God, whatever you mm-hmm. call that to be, in a feeling of just gratitude, just thank you. It's funny, too, when I reflect on that during hard times, because I think, yeah, thanks a lot. Because, you know, life can be a challenge.
Yeah.
But the overwhelming sense is that I'm just in the middle of the most privileged and beautiful condition, even with all the knockdown, drag out, everything.
Yeah. And using your example of the body not being some second-rate thing, if you didn't have the body, you would not have had that experience.
I guess not, yeah.
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 So we don't want to discount the physical body. And the reality is, this is where we are right now.
That's right. In this instant,
we're in the body.
And how do we not know, Richard, that all the kind of the elements in the body aren't holy, like the ability to feel that this table right now is cool. Mm-hmm. And when I walk outside, it's going to smell wonderful with the flowers mm-hmm. after the rain. And, you know, all these things are really poignant and lovely. Yeah. They don't seem like a burden, really.
Yeah. And I know that a lot of people, they get stuck in the, you used the word challenges.
Yeah.
Okay. It's one of those things that I like the word as opposed to when good things versus bad things.
Yeah.
Because I struggle with the concept of duality rather than just accepting that this is just the way things are. They're neither good nor bad. This is the way when in the cosmos, when things collide into one another, is that good or is that bad? No, that's just the way things are. That's the way the cosmos functions.
Mm-hmm.
So why would that be any different on the micro level?
You mean in the body?
In the body or in this material world on this planet as we live.
Well, here's a perfect example mm-hmm. of how these polar opposites can be so satisfying and then how they kind of aid and abet each other in mm-hmm. terms of satisfaction. You know, when you're really hungry, food takes on the most heavenly aspect. Now, if you're full all the time, food never reaches that point of, oh, thank God. You know.
Yeah.
So there is a polarity. Hunger, which a lot of people think is horrible, I've got to eat, you know, especially, I guess, an overweight person cannot endure that feeling of emptiness. But that feeling of emptiness sets you up for that feeling of completion. It's just so wonderful.
Yeah. And again, without the body, you wouldn't have that.
Yeah.
Tricia Malahi is my guest. We are here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we will be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
I'm Richard Dugan here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World with Trish Malahi, and we're very grateful for her to come in studio. She's a local Santa Barbara, and she's an artist as well. I'm curious, when did you become a seeker? What was the moment that you realized that was one of the paths? Because obviously, art is another one of your paths.
That's an interesting question. Well, I don't know. I tend to think that I was how I was when I came in. Yes, interested in. I've always been a very curious person. Even as a child, my nickname was Pooh, as in Winnie the Pooh, because I went around asking questions all the time.
Mm.
But I accidentally took acid when I was a child. My father had it in the refrigerator. We were living on Oahu, and I would come home every day after school for about a week and put LSD in my Tang out of my dad's collection of sugar cubes in the refrigerator.
Wow.
Yeah. And I didn't know what I was doing until my brother caught me at it. But I was already a week in by then.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember during that period just being very thoughtful and very close to nature and taking long walks. And I have no idea if that's what has set me up for it. But I do know that the minute I hit my early 20s, or perhaps even before that as a teenager, I started reading spiritual books talking about why am I here? Where am I going? What does it all mean? You know, these things interest me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What areas intrigue you the most? Related to your spirituality, related to your seeking answers for yourself and your place in the
universe. Well, besides wondering what the God, it's just hard to not to wonder who's behind the whole thing. You know, it's such a gorgeous, creative universe we're a part of. It's fascinating to wonder what's behind it. Beyond that, here I have been very moved by, influenced by the moral conundrums that we face in life. So that area of spirituality, the saints, etc., you know, have been particularly moving to me. And I've, you know, I fail. I'm constantly disappointed in my behavior and, you know, being mean or whatever, bitchy, and failing my heroes. But that particular area is of interest to me. And I've read just about all of the saints in every religion. You know, I'm fascinated by theosophy.
Tell me about that. I've been wanting to have someone on talk about that as well. Theosophy, am I correct? I was supposed to interview a woman who had written this massive tome on a woman by the name, and this may not even apply, Blavatsky.
Blavatsky, yeah. In the last interview I did here, she came up again. I don't even know who she is, I guess. But I tend to think there was a bit of a seance aspect to her. I don't know. Theosophy to me seems like a word not utterly related to her, but I do know that she had a society, the Theosophical Society. To me, it just means theology and philosophy together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. What drew you to theosophy?
The great, beautiful minds that I came into contact with in my lifetime, I've just inspired by them and pursued much of the same interests that they had. Martin Luther King is one of my heroes, and I love the way his mind works, the things he's concerned with. As I said, I fail, but these are my interests.
You fail?
I fail because, you know, when I think of some of the people that I admire, I know that I'm not as loving as I should be. You know, whatever. I fail, but I'm human. I don't know.
Well, and yet, wouldn't you say that that's okay because you're in the process of evolution?
I hope you're right, Richard. I remember when I was younger, in my 20s, someone described me once, someone I met, saying that I was innately good. And at the time, I remember marveling that he thought that about me. Not that I felt I was mean in any way back then. But as I've gotten older and been burdened more by life and bitterness and, you know, the different things that happen, I do feel like I'm not as pure as I was then. That's what I mean.
And yet, being in the physical body,
yeah,
you have had experiences that have elated you and deflated you through your life, right? As we all have, right?
Yes.
And you have learned and grown from that.
Let's hope.
Would you say that you are in the process, I was going to use the word perfection, but of just becoming a better Tricia?
I guess so. I'd like to be more unconditionally loving, but it's so hard for me because I'm quite a perfectionist. I like things a certain way. I'm a bit of a diva. I don't like vulgarity, although, of course, I can have a gallows humor when I'm in such a mood. But anyway, I can be quite judgmental, and so that doesn't always go with being unconditionally loving. But, yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, hopefully I'm evolving.
But isn't that the beginning of that transformation from being judgmental to being more unconditionally loving, is acknowledging the fact that you are, and you said this, I didn't, that you are judgmental. You have a certain element of judgmentalness within you.
Yeah. Well, I guess you're right that maybe admitting it is...
That's what I've heard in therapy.
Precondition.
The first step is acknowledging our foibles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about the dream I had about Freddie Mercury.
Now, that to me is interesting, but I want to touch on something in regards to the Bohemian Rhapsody, the movie.
Yeah.
One of the things that I found so fascinating about that movie, and it was obviously in the early days. And by the way, I have to tell you that I did not recognize Mike Myers.
Oh, you didn't?
I did not know that was
Wasn't
him
he
as
good?
their first producer.
What a great performance.
But what I found so fascinating in those early days, as they were portrayed on the screen, was that when Freddie would come out with an idea, the rest of the group would kind of look at each other, And then they would turn to, yeah. I mean, it was as if they were so in sync. And I guess it was because they trusted, I don't know if it was that they trusted his intuition or their intuition said, yeah, let's do that. That'll work. That'll be great. Let's try that, you know, kind of stuff.
Well, and what aspect of that are we relating to what we're talking about?
Well, just the connectedness that they had.
Oh, yes. And
yeah,
that's one of the reasons I fell in love with this movie and getting to know Freddie Mercury better and that band is they were very they were real gentlemen, which you don't always find in a rock and roll band.
No, you don't.
They had wonderful manners. But, of course, they were all very intelligent and fairly highly educated. But they really loved each other. And that was, even though they did, Brian and Freddie kind of knocked heads. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they really loved each other.
Yeah. So tell me about this dream that you had.
Okay. So, you know, I do sometimes when people die, they'll come into my dreams and talk to me. So it's not something that hadn't happened before. I'd like to believe it was actually him. It does seem like it could have been. So what, I had seen the movie and I was just enthralled. I just couldn't believe that young man, Rami Malek, did such a wonderful job. And I just started researching Freddie and thinking, oh, you're fabulous. And then I've read several books on him now, blah, blah. So then I had a dream pretty early on where he came in and he said, he asked me, and he looked wonderful in the dream. He said, do you know why you're special? And I said, no. Why? He said, because you're authentic in a world where that's not easy. And he kind of laughed and said, believe me, like something like that, like, believe me, I know, I don't know. But that was the whole dream. And when I woke up, I immediately started looking into interviews and whatever to hear if he ever said that. And that came up more than like about 10 times.
Wow.
The word authentic connected to people talking about him, him talking about what was important, you know. So it's funny. And I get a lot of hell for it. So I appreciated him rubber stamping me from the other side.
Yeah. Interesting, because that is one of the subjects that is talked about quite often on this program, that aspect of being is being authentic, being truly who you are. And a lot of people, they'll put on, they have a collection of masks that they will put on throughout the day.
Socially hypnotized, induced on them. It's not even their fault, because as children they didn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. And I remember I've been through several of these, you know, personal growth programs. And that's one of the things that they would, the concept of the mask was what they would talk about.
Oh.
And they would talk about how, you know, when you're with your respective partner, you know, you have one mask. And when you're with your employer, you have another mask. And when you're social situations, just kind of like what you were talking about, we have another mask. So we have this whole, we have this closet full of masks.
Mm-hmm.
And we just keep changing them throughout the day.
You know what? That's one of the most beautiful things about people when they get sick. And it's funny.
Oh, the masks go away, let me tell you.
You're too tired to keep them up. They fall. They have to go. In fact, when my ears started to ring, I noticed my masks, such as they were, started to crack and fall away. My editor, you know, I used to be careful a little more about what I would say. Mm-hmm. You know, things occur to you and you think about them and then you let them out. But when my ears started to ring, it seemed to push everything out the minute it came in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and to that point, we were talking earlier about humility.
Yeah.
I have found that when I fortunately haven't had this happen often, get too full of myself. And this was when I was much younger. It was probably after I was told.
Certainly not now, Richard.
Wise beyond my years. Yeah, exactly. Well, what I have had, this is the experience I've had.
Yeah.
If I get too full of myself, the universe has a way of giving me my comeuppance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing me back down to earth, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I didn't care for that. It did not feel good. So I really try to, you know, I am good at what I do. I can acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. I'm good at what I do. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with me saying that. But, you know, maybe saying I'm the best.
Yeah.
You know, or I'm better than anybody. Hey, when I was growing up in this business, I learned the lesson that we in this business, as in any business, let alone life, we're all climbing this ladder. And there's someone above me and there's someone below me. And there's always going to be someone better than me and someone worse than me.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as I keep that perspective, I'm going to be fine.
I will tell you this to give you a break, Richard. As a man being raised in America, that's what they inject you with, these steroids about you have to be the best.
Yeah.
You've got to beat everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, it's drummed into you from the time you're young. So who can blame you for thinking that's the road to success?
Yeah. Well, and I was able to get rid of that, especially working for different stations, because I would take the position, a lot of people say, well, you know, what's the competition doing? To which I would say, I have no clue, nor do I care. My job in every position that I've held isn't to make us better than them.
Mm-hmm.
It's to make us better than we were yesterday, and then tomorrow to make us better than we are today.
Mm-hmm.
That is my job. And of course, it's my job as a personal, on a personal level, mm-hmm. to make me the best Richard I can be today, better than yesterday, and then tomorrow make me better than I am today.
Right,
you know,
because it's fun. It's fun to do that,
yeah.
Not even in a sense of duty. It's fun to evolve.
Yeah. Have you ever, I'm curious, because I have the opportunity to do this where I live. I live up at the top of San Marcos Pass.
I heard that.
And I have the opportunity every so often to just stand out in front of the house looking towards the valley. And, of course, right now, looking at all the green.
I know. The trees are so happy. I can tell they're smiling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And just, especially when there's no traffic on the 154, to just listen and look at the vibrant colors, even if it's cloudy and so forth. Just mm-hmm. look at all of the shades of everything. And actually try not to think about anything. Just absorbing what my senses are taking in.
That's, to me, the easiest way to get back to center is to be out in nature. It just, nature does all the work for you. You just get out there, it's enough. Yeah.
I have come up with this theory, I'd like your thoughts on it.
Yeah.
That nature is the ultimate teacher if we would just listen.
Yeah, that does. That seems like a very profound idea. And you know, it can sound so simple that you might reject it because you get caught up in all this busy thinking and doing, etc. But it is true, because the natural rhythms of life, of ease, of, you know, nature isn't fighting all the time like we like to.
Mm-hmm.
And that example alone is probably, you know, I have a theory about fake flowers. Like, I just hate them.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone listening, get rid of them if you have them in the house. But the reason why is a bouquet of fresh flowers, even something you've picked from the yard, is going to have such a better effect on you vibrationally, spiritually, than a plastic item. And it's in the same way that you're talking about being out in nature, just contact with a flower can raise your vibration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last summer, when I was out trimming down all of the weeds around our place, we have these beautiful little purple flowered plants that just pop up every so often.
Mm-hmm.
We had one that popped up right in the middle of the roadway,
mm-hmm.
right in front of our cottage. And I mean, I'm going to town on all the other stuff. And I saw that over there. I'm going to go around that. I'm going to leave that there. And and I did. And I did that with a couple of others as well. That's just look. I like the way that looks right there in the middle of the gravel.
Yeah, I can see it in my mind's eye.
And I don't like having to trim things, because I like to have that natural growth. But at mm-hmm. the same time, I also don't like running into it even when I'm ducking down. So I've got to kind of trim
right.
the bottom edge of the tree and what
yeah.
have you. And one of the things that my wife and I have learned about, and she probably already knew this because she grew up as a child up on the hill.
Uh-huh.
And it was the changing of the color, even of the pine trees. Now, you'd think that year-round they're green. Well, yeah, they are, but then again, they're also dropping their needles. And a lot of times what happens is, from the top down, the needles fall, and they fall on the level below, and then those fall. And it almost looks like the tree is dying, okay? And it took me a season or two to realize, oh, no, that's not dying.
Those are the dead needles.
Those are the dead needles, because after a 10-year period, I have this shed that I put underneath this giant pine tree. And I noticed that there was this very thick layer of pine needles. And I thought, well, that's got to be getting heavy on the roof of this shed here. So I started scraping it off. And what was fascinating to me, and it was one of the greatest lessons, as I'm scraping it off with a rake, the top layer was dead pine needles. But everything down below to the roof of the shed was dirt, because the pine needles, just like the leaves, as they decay, that becomes the dirt.
Wow, that's fascinating.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, and so I look at that. And then the other aspect to my question is what species other than man holds up stores for more than a season?
Holds what?
Stores, food, or anything for more than a season.
More than a season?
Not one that I'm aware of.
Not one, okay.
I mean, you think about squirrels, as the example goes. Spring and summer and fall, they're gathering nuts, and they're storing them away maybe
in
the trunk.
Okay, so what's your point?
My point is that man's the only one that does that.
Okay. Is
and
that bad?
Well, look at the processed foods and everything that
we have. That's true. Okay.
What is it they say now? If you bought a Twinkie in 1960,
you can still eat it.
You could still eat it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good point.
You know, and it's so important for us to be eating live foods.
And let me tell you why. Because I don't know if anyone listening is like me, I like to know, well, why? Well, you know, everyone, for so long you hear blueberries are good for you. And I think, well, okay, but why? You know, I always want to know why.
Yeah.
And listen to what I read in a book called Medical Medium. And I loved knowing this. It made me think, oh, that's why I like eating all these fresh foods. But when you eat a blueberry, the blueberry apparently has to kind of weather hard weather. I don't know. Are they grown in the snow or something?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, me neither.
To be honest with you.
Anyway, they have to get through certain conditions that are challenging. And so when you eat a blueberry, all those that kind of bicep that the blueberry had to develop to make it through its growth process, you get it by osmosis.
Oh.
Isn't that wild?
Interesting.
Yeah.
The other aspect of that, too, I'll add to that from a human biological standpoint, that this analogy was shared with me years ago regarding the immune system.
Yeah.
The immune system, our immune system is kind of like a military force, okay?
Yeah.
And that and just as our military has to practice, okay, has to practice to maintain its strength.
Yeah.
Our immune system has to do the same thing.
Okay.
And it is said that the generations, let's just say from the 1990s forward, have very weak immune systems because they don't test their immune systems. I'm not saying that they need to go out and get sick. I was a kid in the 60s. I played in the dirt.
Oh,
okay.
And are you saying that that's been ruled out because of technology or something?
Well, technology has ruled it out because everybody's they're on their screens and they're
well,
not.
Well, it is kind of fascinating, Richard, that nowadays nobody can eat gluten, they can't have milk. I always think, God,
didn't
all
have
these
that when we were growing up, did we?
No.
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 So and that's why I have never had a flu shot in probably 30 or 40 years.
You don't get them? I wonder, because the pharmacist is always trying to force you to get them.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, if I've gotten the flu, I'm still alive. We're sitting here talking, so obviously my immune system must have done its job. I didn't take any antibiotics. I just rested, and my immune system took care of it. So when we don't allow our bodies to do what it is they were designed to do, then we start falling apart and we start having the problems that we see in our society
around
the world today.
Oh, okay, yeah, I see what you're getting at. In fact, myself, when people always give me hell for walking around barefoot, even now in this weather, but believe me, there's nothing more yummy than walking on wet pavement and standing in a stream that's come through because we've had torrential rains.
But see, you're connected to the earth when you do that. Maybe not so much the concrete, but I'm sure you through grass and so forth.
Yeah,
so
everything.
You are staying physically connected to the earth.
Right. And with that in mind, not only the barefoot, I don't know if that, hopefully that's helping my overall health. But I have often thought that having exposure to the elements, not always being cozy and warm, and it makes you a bit too soft. You know, you kind of have to pit yourself against the elements a little bit to build up that immunity.
Well, I will tell you, at the time of this interview this morning, last night we were in Santa Barbara heading up the hill, and when we left Santa Barbara, it was it had gone from 55 when I left the station at a little after 5 p.m. I went to pick my wife up, and the temperature was 50 degrees at the clinic at Bath and Pueblo.
Yeah.
When we got up to our home, it was 36 degrees. Now, that was at 5:30, okay?
Yeah, at
and, of course, 5:30. We loved it. We love the cold.
Because you can light a fire?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then this morning when I go out to let the chickens out of the coop, the temperature was 28 degrees. And the truck was covered. It had looked like it had snowed. It hadn't because it was frost. The moisture
frost,
had frozen. So I had to get in the truck, and for 15 minutes I had the heater on and so forth. But it felt so good. It felt so good. When we went on our trip up north to Yosemite and to Nevada City, we were packing up our vehicle to go to Nevada City from our lodge just outside the park, Yosemite, and it was 28 degrees, and I was loading the truck, and it just felt so invigorating. I just felt so good.
Wow! So you don't get. I mean, I'm not quite as hardy as you are, but so you don't get cold at night, like your feet aren't cold.
I didn't say that.
Okay.
I didn't say I don't get cold.
Okay.
I will put socks on if my feet get cold.
Okay.
And we'll put another blanket on if it's too cold. I even offered that to my wife. She said, "No, I'm fine right now." And I said, "Well, we've got one if you need it." You know. I love to bundle up. You know. Are you cold? I said, "Yeah," but it feels so good.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm from Phoenix. I don't like 110 in the shade. I don't like 90 in the shade. I don't even like 80 in the shade. Okay, when it gets over 80, that's when I start complaining.
Me too. In fact, I used to say about Santa Barbara, it's not really true anymore.
Yeah.
That I love the temperature here. It tops out at 70 and bottoms out at 50. But that's not true now.
No, not right now. Not right now.
No.
And things may be changing. This has been a fascinating conversation. I've really enjoyed this. And I know there's a lot more we could be talking about as well, because there are a lot of other areas that you have studied and searched through as a seeker, trying to understand the universe and your part in it, your place in it, as well as the contributions that you have made through your art and other areas as well, and interviews that you do from time to time.
I do love it. You know, thank you for having me, Richard. You know something, I really envy your position, because to me, being Oprah would be the ultimate, is just to interview people, and kind of what you do, I guess.
I've always been a curious person. And the thing I love about interviewing is, and I've used this, for me, it's like Christmas morning. And I get to open up this package.
Oh.
And I get to go into this world I've never been in before and learn things and maybe even take bits and pieces of what I've learned and incorporate them into my life or have a better understanding or a different perspective, which is what we like to do on this program. There's an event that's happening, and there's this circle. And what we are trying to do is move from point to point on that circle to get a different perspective of that event that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a better understanding of what is happening. So that, you know, maybe that will help to quell any of the a judgment that we might have. And then, of course, there will be situations where we might find ourselves in the event, in the middle of the circle.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got to do some observing because, I was observing that person who was going through that, and I had some judgments. And as I moved around the circle, I began to understand better. You know, because we never get the full
picture.
Yeah,
you know what's funny? I have a friend who's a very straight-laced Republican. Sorry, I'm using the word. But anyway, he was a bit homophobic. And then he had a child. And this child grew up to be gay. And now he couldn't be more LGBT, whatever. Mm-hmm. He's completely. So that's all it takes to shift a prejudice is to have an experience of loving someone who's like that.
And what if the universe heard what was going on and said, okay.
Okay.
I mean, you don't know. We just don't know.
Yeah.
And he drew that experience to him to open his eyes to a broader perspective.
Mm-hmm. You know? Unconditional love.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Again, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. Is there a way people get in touch with you, or is there a website that you have or nothing?
No. I want no contact. Thank you, though.
No. Well, we'll stay in touch. Before we let you go, I have three final questions to ask you.
Okay.
And again, thank you so much for giving us so much time.
First
question is, who is Tricia Mullahy?
A work in progress.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I tell you, my main impulse in life, my main need or want is to contribute something beautiful to the arts, of course, because that's my area. But I want to leave something beautiful on this planet before I go.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
What is my life purpose? I guess to bring more love into my life. If I can sound kind of romantic. Not just romantic love, but love with friends, people, you know, just bring love into your life is what I think is important.
Well, Trish Mulhahy, I want to thank you again for joining us here on the program. This has been fun.
Thank you.
We'll do it again.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. A reminder that you can listen to the podcasts on SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, as well as the homepage of RichardDugan.com or the radio show's page. And if you'd like to support what we're doing, please do so at the PayPal account link that is on the homepage, as well as the missions page. And then a reminder that if you're listening to the radio broadcast, be sure to go to the podcast, because there's more to this interview than meets the ear, I'll say. And again, thank you so much to our guest. I thank you for listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And until next time, love, Talal.